This is Kate Magruder. It's June 18th. I'm at the Grace Hudson Museum recording Promise of Paradise, Oral Histories of Back to the Land in Mendocino County. Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Ross Walker.
When and where were you born?
I was born in Toronto, Canada in 1947.
And when and why did you come to Mendocino County?
Well, I came to live in Mendocino County in 1974. I probably visited the first time, maybe 1972, somewhere in that range. Came and visited again in 1973. Where I was visiting was a particular destination. It wasn't just Mendocino County. I was coming to, as we referred to it in Laguna Beach, where I was living at that time, the land. That was Greenfield Ranch, west of Ukiah. Place that turned me on in so many ways when I came to visit and drew me out of urban life and kind of a mixed up life in a way at that point in time for me, breaking up of a relationship and also kind of a lack of direction in my graduate studies, not really knowing what I wanted to do, and coming up and visiting my friends, Bob Currier, Kate Babcock at that time, and just seeing what was going on in the hills of Mendocino County somehow felt like this is where I wanted to be. That's what motivated me.
And what was it like when you came here? What did you see on Greenfield Ranch? What can you describe it for me?
When I came to Greenfield Ranch in the early 70s, what I saw was an open, beautiful area of land. But what I also saw were young people my age from various backgrounds who were just taking a different course than what I had been doing. So it wasn't just the place, it was the people, it was the community, it was building houses from scratch, building gardens from scratch, getting together with people and hanging out and playing music and doing it all in what were challenging but really fun circumstances. And the challenge was, hey, we didn't have electricity, we had bad roads, we were a ways out of town, but we just felt this huge inspiration to, and really this gift. Like, wow, we get to do this? Let's take complete advantage of what's going on. So I just saw an opening, I think is really what I saw for myself. It seemed like, okay, Southern California, Laguna Beach, that wasn't a terrible place to live. I was near the ocean. I played Frisbee a lot. It wasn't like it was a bad environment, but this place here just seemed, well, you've got paradise on your coming to paradise. It seemed like in its own way that.
And what did you think you were going to do when you moved here?
What did I think I was going to do when I came here? Well, professionally, at that point in my life, I was really motivated a lot more by what I would say are idealism than I was by, you know, where my next dollar was going to come from. And so when I came to Mendocino County, I don't know if I had a clue, really, how I was going to make a living, particularly. I knew I had to have some income. But as I look back on it right now, I'm not sure exactly what I had in mind as far as making money, because it didn't really seem that important. Changed, of course, over time. But at the time, I don't think idealism is too strong a word. That was what was going on, not just in my life, but in lots of people's lives. It's like, hey, there's something more here than... In fact, in a certain way, it was a rejection, what I'd come out of. It's not like I had a bad life growing up or anything like that, but for whatever reasons, part of a movement of people that saw the Vietnam War as sickening, and so we had a great disgruntlement with what was going on governmentally. More and more, I saw the smog of Southern California just being, and the traffic, and a lot of things just seemed like... It seemed like the world was falling apart, and it is. It's not like that's changed. What the advantage of these many years now is teaching me anyway is it's not like we were wrong. We may have just have had the pace of things a little off. But the thing that we got, that things are going in a bad direction and let's look for something else, seemed way, way, way more important than what I'd gotten into graduate school for, seeking a professional job and, you know, what I might be doing as career. It just seemed like way more important to figure out what's wrong and what's going on.
So what did you first do when you got here? Where exactly did you live and how?
What I did when I first came to Mendocino County to live for a period of time, at the time I didn't really know how long I would live there. Here I am this many years later. It was 1974, and my friends, Bob and Kate, did a gig back in Woodstock, Illinois, regularly, and it seemed like they needed a truck to get there that year, and it seemed like I needed a place to stay. So as a trade for being in their cabin on Greenfield Ranch, they took my truck to Illinois. And I was truckless, but that was okay. I had a place to hang out and stay. So I was so fortunate that Bob and Kate were a little step ahead of me in where they were headed and already had built something, and I'd already come up to visit and had been entranced by what they were doing and where they were doing it. So I just kind of fell into being the caretaker of Parcel 13 in the fall of 1974. And in the course of being on Greenfield Ranch, I met a woman, Marguerite at that time, Mira, somewhat later, and we struck up a relationship. And by the time Bob and Kate got back from Illinois, about 5 or 6 months later, I don't exactly recall how long now, I'd basically moved in over at Marguerite's place with her and her two kids, and I began earning money as a tree planter, which seemed like a good thing to do and a good, healthy, productive thing to do, is go plant trees in the ground. So I started working on a tree planting crew for Masonite Corporation, back when Masonite ran its own tree planting crews, and that was in the winter of 74-75.
And then did you eventually buy your own land on Greenfield Ranch?
Well, eventually I became a part owner of the parcel that Mira owned, and I still own with her and with our son Orion and her two sons, Eric and David, that were 5 and 8 years old when I got together with Mira. So yeah, I'm currently and still an owner of property on Greenfield Ranch, although I haven't lived there in a few years.
Did you build your own house there?
It's interesting how I learned what I have learned about building. My main skill in building, I would say, is getting myself associated with guys who knew how to build things, because it was never part of my upbringing, nor has it been over my life a real big part of my interests and desires. But I hooked up with a guy named John Hensley not too long after I moved to Greenfield Ranch, who I used to refer to as the wizard, simply because it didn't seem like there was any building problem he couldn't solve. He was totally self-taught as far as I could tell. I mean, the guy was about 17 years old when he moved to Greenfield Ranch, but built his own house from scratch. So I followed John around a lot when I was trying to figure out building stuff, and I managed to talk John into building a lot of stuff for me. It's a whole other project, how we got our kitchen house started on our parcel, Mira's parcel. There was a big project, boy, I can't even remember the year, but it would have been 76 or 77, to take down these greenhouses in Redwood City. And a whole bunch of us from Greenfield Ranch descended on this parcel of land that dispensing with their greenhouses and outbuildings. And I saw this one shed building that I thought, as is, that kind of forms the basis for what a nice kitchen house. That's what we built our first structure after Mira's dome on parcel 18. I just thought, well, it's all kind of there. If we could just move it up to the ranch, it would work. So a bunch of guys, mainly John Hensley and at that time, Rocky Gulledge was his name he was going by, Chris later, helped me saw this thing down in pieces and load it on a flatbed truck and carry it up to Greenfield Ranch and build a platform foundation for it and lean the wall pieces up together and link them together and then build a roof over the top, largely with completely recycled materials. And that was where we moved in our wood cook stove and our kerosene lamps and in 1977, and that's right where my son Orion was born, as we got ready for him. You know, we're building the kitchen house and getting the dome spiffed up a bit, and had Mira had Orion right on the floor of the dome in November of 1977, and we were ready for him with a little house in that first year.
What do you remember about that first birth?
What do I remember about the birth of my son? on Greenfield Ranch, what I remember is being pretty stressed out as it got towards the time of the birth, because the birth was in November. Orion was born November the 10th. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of gravel on the Greenfield roads. And the midwife, Lynn Meadows, lived way across the other side of the ranch. So, you know, what if the roads are out that night? What if it's bad driving? You know, that was my one of my main concerns. So I bought myself a big old International Harvester four-wheel drive vehicle, thinking if we have to really get somewhere that night, we got to have a way to do it. So I really remember the preparation of being ready with the idea of how do we get the midwife here under difficult circumstances, and how do we get Mira out if we had any kind of problem. So the night my son Orion was born, Mira went into labor sometime in the middle of the night, and I do not recall when. But the plan was I was going to drive over to the other side of the ranch and get Lynn and bring her back. Lynn, the midwife. I came out of our dome, and for whatever reason, I don't recall why, our neighbor, David Patton, was either going out or coming in. Probably coming in. It was probably 1 a.m. or something like that. And I grabbed him and said, David, would you drive over and get Lynn so that I can stay here with Mira? And he said, fine. So I went back and hung out with Marguerite, Mira. David rode across the ranch, got Lynn, brought her back. She came in, immediately gave me my marching orders of get these instruments boiling on that top of that stove. And the rest was just a matter of, come over here and catch this kid. Mira did the rest, of course, and Lynn. I do remember, I think it was the same night, as it was over, and Mira got up, and we went outside our doors and looked up into the sky, and the constellation of Orion was up there in the stars, and we said, Orion, that's who he'll be, Orion. So he was.
What was it like to raise him on the ranch?
Raising kids on the ranch was really, when I think about it, probably the most fulfilling thing I've done in my life. Raising kids. When I think about it all, you know, anything I'd done that I say is, you know, got any importance to it is passing it on to the next generation. Luckily for me, you know, I had the chance to be with Mira for a while and get into the fathering process to some degree with her boys, David and Eric. So I wasn't completely at a loss, as I likely would have been if I was just had, you know, from scratch. Because really what I was doing in those early years, I had a baby, but I was also pretty responsible for a five-year-old and an eight-year-old, as they, by that time, older than that, a little older than that. So there was a Greenfield Ranch school that David and Eric commuted to by horseback. And it's amazing to me, looking back on that too, because I had no, you know, experience at all with animal husbandry, period. But Mira, a very fearless person in many respects, as far as going into things and figuring them out as you go into them, but not waiting to figure them out ahead of time, doing them. So kids want to go to school over at the ranch house. A good way to get there would be horses. Let's go buy horses, which we went and bought horses. And the kids had these, you know, wonderful animals that I basically did the work of bringing the animal food to and helping build a corral, you know, getting them fed. But the kids learned how to ride. The kids learned how to take care of the animals. They did it. And Orion grew up watching his older brothers get on a horse and go across the ranch to the Greenfield school. And having Orion on the ranch at that particular time was just a neat time, because there was a group, like there were about six women that got pregnant right about the same time. So he had his closest friend, Jan, now Hebron, just over the hill. And they grew up together, playing around and sliding down the hills on cardboard, climbing trees, a different world from what I grew up in. Yeah, just a completely neat place to be. And then as things were going on at that time for me earning some money, I helped start a company that did forestry work, tree planting, tree thinning, stream clearance, all within these ideals of doing things together communally. It was a complex type of organization. to run, and it was focused on doing environmental type of work as well as making some money. But it also gave an incredible experience for the kids, particularly Orion. As he grew up, he got to go be in the camps that we set up in various places. And as the company grew, that turned out to be a lot of places. We planted trees all over the Northwest. Mira came along as cook on a number of the jobs. She cooked for a whole summer in the High Sierras when we were doing trail work when Orion was 3 years old. And David and Eric spent the summer there too, just doing camp work. It was a great way to raise a kid, in my opinion. A lot of fun. And I think they learned a lot of skills and life lessons doing it. I'm proud of them where they are, where they got to out of it.
Was there music particularly at that time for you in your life and your family's life?
There was a lot of music on Greenfield that we made ourselves a lot of the time. I should not pass up saying too that you, Kate, are somebody that, when I look back, that the music of words spoken together in a group is something I really learned from you. I remember before I ever moved to Greenfield, coming up and staying on a really wet November in your cabin up there. I believe it was 1973. And your and Bob's, but particularly your way of just making part of the day, taking whatever book was taking you somewhere, and we'd sit there and we'd pass the book around and read passages. And that to me is something that stayed with me, the power in words and words spoken together. So that's a little far from saying about music, but there's a music in words. And you taught me a bunch of that. I remember Kurt Vonnegut. I remember Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. Some of the things that were going on then, you know, were powerful to me to read it together. And it was also totally great. Bob had a piano up there. And from the first days I visited up there, Bob playing piano, me playing guitar, and then Bob Dress coming over and playing whatever. And gosh, there were just numerous other people, and probably a number of whose names I've forgotten now, but Tom Johnson and many others. We'd just get together and jam and play music a whole bunch. It was part of, I don't know what you'd call it, part of what we did was frequently, I remember, you know, carrying my guitar case as we'd walk over from wherever it might be to the ranch house or over to Marv's or something like that. I'd have, you know, have the guitar case with me and we'd just sit down and play. And it's interesting that I think about it now as I look back, there's a whole era of popular music that I know very little about because I was tuned out for a while. Music was an incredible big part of my life, the era of the Beatles, the Stones. I was going to lots of concerts. I was all taken up by that. Then I go to Greenfield, no power, you know, or a little handheld boombox and a couple of tapes. And then word of mouth is what it, you know, became more. And yeah, you might do a big trip down to the city to go see Taj Mahal or Randy Newman or somebody that was really turning you on. But a lot of it, for a whole era there, whatever was going on in popular music, I was missing because we were making it ourselves. Music has continued to be a part of my life.
Can you sing a little piece of a song that you would have sung then with a group of people or around a campfire?
Boy, could I sing a piece of a song? I could probably do Brown Sugar. I can't get the tune. Why do you taste so good? Brown sugar, just like a young girl should. Mick went on and on from there. But did we have fun trying to bang that out on the guitar and the piano over and over again? And many others too.
What do you remember about potlucks? What would you be apt to find at a potluck?
What do I remember about potlucks? That is a good question because I remember a lot of putting up food. That's something that I really haven't thought about in a while because I don't do that now in my life. But wow, back in the Greenfield days, I became a canner of things. I learned canning. and I learned preserving food, and I learned a whole garden to storage of food system that had definitely was new to me. And I can remember going to some gathering at which food was a part of, and being really turned on by Mark Gary, who had been over the hill to Ridgewood Ranch and had come back with this fabulous honey that he was touting as being the nectar of honeys, and passing it around the group, and everybody kind of sticking their finger in and licking off this crystallized, great, from the garden type honey, which turned out to be, for me, kind of a beacon of, where is this Ridgewood Ranch? And let's get over there. And it turned out I would make the hike over the hills and work in the garden over there. I also remember going into kitchens, like close to where we lived was Bob and Lynn. And Lynn was a great putter up of food, and going over there and kind of being sometimes part of whatever was going on. I can't remember the various things right now, but part of it was getting the food together, or kind of like a food party. I'm going a little bit beyond potluck, I think, but it had to do, what was going on with food was a big part of why we were on the land. I think it's about some of the dumb things we did. I remember before we ever came up, before you guys got the cabin up on parcel 13, Ed and Rocky and I don't remember who else, came up one winter with a bunch of fencing, stayed at the ranch house where Dennis and Kathy were down there. We trucked it on up the hill. Carried. You know, we carried the, you know, fence posts and fencing and on up. Got it all up there. You know, the whole project being to build a fence so we could plant fruit trees, because that was the whole point of, you know, being on the land. You got to have fruit trees. We put 2x4s, just raw fir wood, into the ground and hung fencing around it. And it couldn't have been more than a year before the thing completely fell down or were knocked over by the herd of wild goats that were up there. We knew nothing about what we were doing, but we were determined that we were going to get fruit trees into the ground, because that was, you know, like the most important thing to do. I haven't been a great gardener in my life, but anything I learned about it started really on Greenfield. Got turned on to a lot of stuff related to growing food, being there.
What was the governance of Greenfield Ranch Association? What did that mean to be part of an association?
The governance of Greenfield Ranch, it's almost strange to use the word governance, thinking about how ungoverned it was in a way, looking back on it. And of course, it's evolved over the years like everything else has. But way back then, did we think about having insurance and did we think about liability issues and many of the things that I came to be quite familiar with in my subsequent career? No, we didn't. I think the whole idea back then in the beginning years was trying to figure out how this piece of land that this visionary guy, Tim Baker, had managed to put into the hands of a bunch of young people back to the Landers could be governed and nurtured as a community. That's really what we were looking at in the beginning days. You know, what things here, what features of things can we do that will promote a good community of folks? And it necessarily involved some basic things like roads, getting in and out. So a lot of the early governing part of Greenfield was figuring out how to tax ourselves to pay sufficiently to put enough work into the roads so that vehicles could come in and out on them. That was sort of like the kernel of the beginning part of things. There was also a lot of concern about personal rules in relation to the community's desires. Because, say, for instance, hunting. You know, many of us came with an ideal that we don't kill animals. And certainly there were people there that from the very beginning, the idea was to kill a deer so you can eat it. And that'll get you through the winter. I can well remember sitting in around a cook stove or somewhere in the Greenfield Ranch House, listening to Troll Brandon and Marilyn basically arguing it out with other folks about how taking the deer was the right thing to do. And some of the rest of us, you know, were going, oh my gosh, really? No, that, how could we do that? So governance involved a lot of figuring out what rules do we really want to adhere to amongst ourselves. I mean, some of them were pretty easy and pretty basic. Nobody really wanted to put pesticides on the ground. Everybody wanted to keep it out. Nobody wanted to see anybody, their neighbor, having a logging contract going on their piece of property. We wanted to keep that away from what we were doing. There were certain things about commercialism that, you know, we were not happy with the idea of at all. But other things, issues, you know, like the hunting thing, issues came up. And lots of meetings. And really, the meetings really goes back to potlucks, because the meetings were gatherings. We didn't just meet. We gathered. Played music, we ate together, and we tried to figure out, you know, what's next, what's on the life agenda. So as time went on, of course, that changed because parcels of land became more divided off. People's lives became more independent in terms of where they were earning money. That was true for myself and for lots of other folks. Commuted to town, did other things to make money. So your house became, in a way, more of a bedroom rather than a complete focus of what was going on in your life. But that was later on.
Can you describe a particular special occasion at the ranch that stands out to you?
There are so many occasions on the ranch that stand out to me. In the early years, it was a party a lot of times, you know, impromptu. But there was a drawing together on certain occasions. Halloween was one, New Year's, but particularly solstice, the summer solstice party was a regular event every year. And if I cast my mind across it, there are just a number of things that would be standouts. But I'll say one was standing in the parking lot of the Greenfield Ranch House when the Flying Karamazov brothers had been invited to that party, and they showed up, guys that afterwards became stars in the entertainment circuit, Las Vegas and whatnot. But back in those days, they were kind of folks like us, hanging out and doing stuff and taking their act around here and there. But there they were at the Greenfield Ranch House on solstice, who knows exactly what year. There we are, we're out in the parking lot with a whole big circle of people circled around these guys, three of them, who were pretty long distances, I would estimate at least 30 feet, juggling various objects, going around in a three-way thing, and everybody's just cheering them on, and somebody in the crowd yelled, "Take it off!" And these guys, hardly without a beat, while they juggled these clubs and things that were going on, and the clubs were flying, and they were pulling off various parts of their clothing, their shoes, and then their shirts as they went, until we had three nude guys juggling stuff, and the crowd went wild. Of course, they took it off as they juggled, and that one has stood out to me. And I've told that story a few times, and I'm happy to tell it here.
I was there.
Cool.
So I'm going to take you off the ranch. What was your sense of the reception that you and other people had from the community that was already here, that was already established, that had been here for decades or generations? Can you remember an encounter or kind of an encounter?
The reception in the community for the people that came in the early 70s then was mixed. Ukiah, pretty traditional town, and the interface that we had with the community, because we were doing things like buying fencing and taking care of animals, frequently brought us into contact with the farm supply store and a number of places around the stockyard that used to be down on the south end, where you met folks that were a little bit different background than what I had come out of in Laguna Beach, that's for sure, going to a liberal university. So I can remember going into the auction yard there on the south end of town where you could get manure, and which is what we were looking for. And I was there with a guy named Tom Forrest, and both of us pretty long hair, pretty different looking, and the guys in there just simply refusing to let us have it. And I was kind of argumentative, but Tom was just going, come on, we got to get out of here. We're not getting this. So I remember that interaction, and I can remember some other interactions like it. But I also remember the standout people in this community. The two really for me were a guy named Baldy from Ridgewood Ranch, and the other one is, well, it's two, George and Ella Butler in their place with the Cherry Ranch, who just taught me incredible life lessons of openness. And they came out of the same traditional background, agricultural-oriented people on the land. You know, their friends were the mechanics and the lots of other folks from the same area. And yet, they just opened their lives and their hearts and their pieces of land to this new generation of folks that came up. And so it was a real turn on, a welcoming. And I know there were others that were around that I didn't have the good fortune of encountering. But those folks, for me, were important and an example of, hey, this is a great area, and with a mix of folks. And you had to be, I kind of learned you had to be like maybe a little more cognizant. I was probably pretty naive back in those days. I remember Liz Perkins used to like to braid my hair. I had long hair, but it never looked the way it would other than when Liz would make these wild braids in it. And when I would go around town with those braids, when I think about it now, looking back there in the 70s, I look pretty different from most of the folks. And yet I didn't pay much attention to it. I just, what was going on at that time was more like, just get it done. Go do it. Let them figure it out. You know, I didn't really pre-think how my encounters might work out. And sometimes that was a little bit to my disadvantage.
What do you think the impact of all of these people, including us, coming to this area in the early 70s, what impact has that, and staying, many of us, has that had on Mendocino County? How's it changed?
Well, the impact of those of us that came in that era, in my opinion, has changed Mendocino County just immensely. It's sort of even hard to imagine what Mendocino County would be like were it not for the influx of folks and the transitions that a lot of us have made. Just thinking about where we're sitting right now at the County Museum, Ukiah seemed like such a faraway place when I first came to Greenfield. But the inroads that, I mean, you could just go down long lists, and I'm sure you have because you're talking to a ton of these folks. But so many of us, and when I looked at your list, I just thought, holy mackerel, you know, there's a judge, there's a business owner, and these are people that I know and sometimes worked with and just hung out with, never even thought about, you know, where we were, you know, what effect we might have. But many folks and have been an inspiration in terms of what you can do in community. If you hang around and you meet people and you just have a lot of good things and good ideas going and have tremendous abilities. It's sort of impossible to answer that question, though, without saying that the pot industry has had a humongous effect, and not all to the positive. It's mixed, in my opinion. And there's a lot of negative out of what has transformed the economy of this area. And I think that's totally inevitable, because it's not just Mendocino County. It's like lots and lots of places where you can make a lot more money, you know, less now, but for a substantial period of time, it motivated the lives of tons of people and quite differently, with quite different effects, depending on a lot of things, for good and bad.
Is there an experience, a moment that for you epitomizes what this whole opportunity has meant to you, or, you know, a moment when you were living here thinking, I got to remember this, doesn't get much better than this?
It's hard to think about really a lifetime to single out a moment of singular importance. For some reason where that's taking me, and I'm sure if I thought about that question for a long period of time, I might come up with different moments. What I'm thinking about is the work job that I did with a crew of guys and gals on the North Fork of the Garcia River, and that would have been the early 80s. I can't remember exactly the date right now. It's a deep gorge the North Fork of the Garcia and a long hike to get equipment in there, so far a long hike that we contracted with Smith Helicopter to helicopter our gear in there. And we lived down in there for several weeks working on log jams. And I do remember a night down in there just feeling like my life had changed so much from where I'd been going. And this just seemed like incredible that I could be actually making money, supporting my family, doing this work that felt like important for environmental reasons, and doing it with this incredible group of people that we were working together. And I was learning skills from, and it was kind of like a wow moment at the same time that it was a oh shit moment in a way, because, you know, we were doing work that was related to a lot of bad environmental practices, but we were there working on it. I do recall just having a feeling there about it's important what I'm doing. It's good that I'm doing this, and it's lucky that I've managed to find this.
Going off from that, how in a big picture can you articulate what impact making that decision to come here in 74 and live here, how has that made you who you are? How has that shaped?
Well, I have been shaped by my decision to come here in so many ways, but I feel like it's not until I got to Mendocino County and met Mira, I really have to say, that I did what I would call, how I call myself anyway, grow up. Yeah, my life was casting about. I don't know where I would have ended up exactly. I could imagine myself not having had the experience of coming here in a pretty mundane and suburban and who knows what tract of life. But coming here and meeting Mira, because that happened early on, and that took me in the direction of parenting on the land, which is, like I was saying before, is the biggest thing of my life, really, to do that. And that's when I kind of felt like I was becoming a man, really, in a way that was so different from, I felt like it, okay, I'm taking on responsibility, and not for family, but for the environment, for this community, and it just gave me a sense of purpose that has shaped my life.
Is there anything else you want to say as we wind this up?
I can pretty clearly say to the question, do I have anything else to say? No. Only because you are such a good interviewer, and I've gone places in talking with you that I didn't think about at all. You know, I've gone some places I did think about, but mostly I'm managed to say things that I feel like totally involved in this moment right now. So there's really no thing that I need to go out there and grab and say, I had to bring this here, you know, because I feel like I've expressed myself and you've given me that opportunity, and I thank you.
We've been listening to a lightly edited interview with Ross Walker as part of Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. This program airs on KZYX at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. You can also catch shorter excerpts during the news hour on Thursday mornings at 7:45 and 8:45, and again at 6 p.m. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.